When Stanford White, one of the most famous architects of the era, whose mark on New York City is second to none, was murdered by Harry Thaw in 1906, his death became known as the crime of the century. But there were other players in this love triangle gone wrong that would play a part in the incredible acquittal of White's murderer. Chief among them was the ambitious district attorney, William Travers Jerome, who wrecked his career with the failed prosecution of Thaw. Award-winning journalist Mary Cummings reveals a new angle to this incredible crime in her book, Saving Sin City, William Travers Jerome, Stanford White, and the Original Crime of the Century. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Mary Cummings to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Give us a sense of what brought you to this story during the Gilded Age in New York City.
Well, there is a personal angle. I was born and raised in Southampton, which some people may know is a very fashionable resort out on the end of Long Island. And it was established as a fashionable place in the Gilded Age. And it continues because every summer for 2 months, we have our own little Gilded Age here. We also have it's a place where Stanford White has left his mark. There are some beautiful summer houses here that he designed. And, of course, he designed the clubhouse of the Shinnecock Hills Golf Club, which is about to host the Open. So I feel like I've always been interested in history, and I began to think that I had the makings of a book drew on my background there.
Stanford White, one of the most famous architects of the era, certainly had quite a mark on New York City, and murdered by Harry Thaw in 1906, this became known as the crime of the century. Bring us to that date and time as to why this did indeed become the crime of the century.
Well, of course, Stanford White was very celebrated, and so when he was murdered in the rooftop garden theater at the fabulous Madison Square Garden that he had designed by the jealous Harry K. Thaw, who was jealous of him because, of course, Stanford White had had a notorious affair with Evelyn Nesbit, who was the beautiful it girl of that era. Thaw was very upset, and he was easily upset about how White had treated her at that time. And he was also obsessed with White because White had everything he had in this wonderful Gilded Age. He thought he was rich. He was in every club. He was a huge presence socially and a brilliant architect. And Thaw had nothing but his money, but he had lots of it.
So enter William Travers Jerome and give us a sense of his role in this triangle.
I will, yes. Well, it's interesting that we went right to New York City because I soon realized that that was where all the interesting things were happening, not in Southampton. So at that same time, William Travers Jerome, who was very ambitious, he had his eye on the governorship and was kind of looking at the White House. But at the beginning of his career, he was a fierce fighter against injustice. He got a great fandom among the oppressed, and he would go after, of course, he was nearly as famous as White at the time, which is hard to believe now because he's largely forgotten. But New York City had gone over the edge in lawlessness and greed at the time, which was, of course, the underside of the Gilded Age. So he went after Tammany, which ruled with an iron fist and was completely corrupt, the political system. And he would raid these gambling dens with his crews and take his axe and break down doors. And he did rise and became New York DA And that is how he landed the job of being the prosecutor of Thaw in this trial also of the century. So that is his role, and it made a wonderful contrast with the character of Stanford White, who was a dedicated hedonist. So I decided to do alternate chapters, one on White and one on Jerome.
Mm. What ultimately do you think you found out that was new about this case and about this crime of the century?
Well, one thing I found out was Evelyn Nesbitt, who was, you know, always portrayed as this frail chorus girl who's kind of in the middle, but she really was a much more complex character, and I found it fascinating. She had a miserable childhood. She had to take over the affairs, take care of her mother and her brother after her father died. She was so impoverished that there sometimes was not enough food on the table. So she very early on developed, a way of being, of dealing with the cards she was dealt and surviving. And she was also very smart. And there are a couple of memoirs she wrote. She's never a very reliable witness to her story, but she's funny in those memoirs. And she has a funny perspective on this world she was thrown into.
Tell us a little bit about Harry Thaw and ultimately how he was acquitted.
He was a terrible person. He was a pervert and a sadist, but he had a doting mother, and he had a huge fortune behind him. And he came to New York thinking he was going to conquer society. And he ended up blaming Stanford White for everything that went wrong in his life, which really was his own fault because he did terrible things. He tried to ride a horse up the steps of the Union Club. He had a miss, a madam down in the Vice neighborhood who would get him young girls. He had this arrangement and he would whip them. But he became obsessed with Evelyn Nesbitt, partly because she had had an affair with White, whom he hated. And he worked diligently to marry her. That was his goal. And the reason that he came out so well from the trials had to do a lot with the yellow press, which had swallowed whole this whole idea that a man had a right to kill the person who had done bad things with either his wife or his sister. Now, by this time, Evelyn was his wife. She had been worn down. And the public decided that the only way to deal with the hedonistic upper classes, I mean, there was huge building public resentment against the rich, was to kill him. So that made it very hard for Jerome.
The impact, you believe, the impact of this case is still being felt today.
Well, I believe a lot of things are still being felt that were issues that came up at that time and that Jerome was fighting against. We, of course, have the Me Too movement now, and what Stanford White did to Evelyn Nesbitt when she was 16 by plying her with drink, which might have been spiked, and then sexually assaulting her, it would never fly now. But, it was that sort of thing. He did go, even for his hedonistic friends, he did go too far. But that was, people cast a blind eye on what the rich did. We have other issues. I mean, God knows we have alternate facts and fake news creeping in, and it's not the yellow press, but, you know, we have people who are doing things on Wall Street that aren't necessarily illegal, but they're certainly not ethical. We're still struggling with the insanity plea. We don't know how to decide who can use it and who can't. And we're still arguing about whether you can love the art and not the artist. Stanford White is seen as a respected and admired architect now, but his personal reputation is tarnished and probably forever.
Well, the name of the book is Saving Sin City, William Travers Jerome, Stanford White, and the Original Crime of the Century. The book is published by Pegasus. Mary Cummings, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Saving Sin City, published by Pegasus. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.